Hello and welcome to another Scottish Green Party's podcast. I'm Lorna Slater, one of the party co-leaders, and with me today is...
Fuad Alakparov. I'm from Glasgow. I'm a political commentator, a photographer, and also anti-racism activist.
So Fuad was recommended to me by Twitter. So I am... This is one of a series of podcasts which I'm doing where we think about what kind of Scotland we would like to build, what we would like the future of Scotland to be. And I put it out on Twitter. I said, who would you like to hear from? Who's got good ideas for what a future Scotland could look like? And Fuad was recommended. So we haven't met before. This is the first time we've ever spoken. But Fuad, tell me, you've been doing some cooking during lockdown.
Yeah, I know lockdown has not brought the best of times, but I think it's good to focus on positive. And I've been cooking a lot, and I have to say, good diet and good healthy lifestyle is always important as well, even during the lockdown, because most people are having a lot of mental health issues, as well as maybe physical issues. So we can always focus on ourselves as well, because happiness comes within. At least I'm believing in that.
And what kind of food do you like to cook?
I have to be honest, I'm not the best cook. But I really like Greek cuisine, so I'm trying a lot of new recipes from Greece as well as Azerbaijani cuisine, which I'm originally from. So I think it's kind of best of both worlds, European and Asian, or Eurasian, we say.
I've never had Azerbaijani cuisine. What's that like?
Azerbaijani cuisine is actually, we use a lot of mutton and parsley. We have a lot of parsley.
Love parsley.
I will say our rice and kebabs are one of the best in the world, and I'm saying that not as Azerbaijani or Scottish of Scottish person of Azerbaijani roots, but I just believe it's one of these regions that people don't have enough knowledge about, and they should definitely should check out.
Excellent. Very good. So I'm interested in particular your work on anti-racism. So I would like to build a new Scotland where we don't have racism. What does that look like? What do we need to do?
Unfortunately, a lot of people have idea that Scotland is free from racism when it's not, because we do have a lot of issues in Scotland related to racism. As we can see, death of Sheku Bayo by police was like a very sad situation, and shows we do have a lot of work to do as well in Scotland. And I have spoken to many minorities in Scotland regarding racism, and most people believe that it's like everybody agrees that racism is wrong, but people from different racial backgrounds and as well as other minorities have a struggle in terms of getting their voices out, because they feel they will be targeted or they will face stigma. And so I believe it's very important to build some kind of mechanism to get their voices out, because nobody should be bullied because of their ethnic background or sexual orientation or religion or anything else. And I believe Scotland should build some kind of mechanism in terms of reporting hate crimes, because it's becoming a very key issue, especially in the world where far right is gaining power, and we must stop it before it spreads like a wildfire, because it's very dangerous.
So some way of reporting hate crimes, presumably, I mean, that doesn't involve the police. I don't know how hate crime reporting works now.
Usually when you see a hate crime, most people tend to report to police. But some people believe that even within police, there's a lot of ignorance towards hate crimes, saying, you know, this will go away. Not enough action's been taken. Furthermore, in Sheku Bayo's case, we've seen that not always police take best action, because we believe there should be more people from diverse backgrounds involved in police as well. And also, I am like any activist calling for transparency. We need to know how much hate crime is happening, because from the information we have, it's only reported cases. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of cases not being reported, because people fear that they will be always under spotlight from the media, especially far-right media, and that can ruin their lives. So there should be some kind of anonymous reporting. But it's very important to get their voices out. And it's very important to say that like hate crimes, it not only, and especially racial crimes, is not only affecting people from different backgrounds, because some people, even from Scotland, married to people from different backgrounds, so they also face bullying, and we need to stop that, and it's getting to dangerous levels, and I'm very concerned about that.
So I was horrified a few weeks ago. I did a podcast with another anti-racism activist, but I had originally wanted to do a podcast with a colleague of mine, a young Black woman engineer who I worked with, and she was uncomfortable doing the podcast with me because she felt that it could reflect badly on her career and that her career could be damaged. And that's the kind of racism that I think is so insidious, where you can't speak up about your own experiences, your own real experiences, because you very genuinely could be penalized at your work, not promoted, laid off, you know, given, you know, been harassed by your colleagues just for talking about your real experiences. I was horrified by that.
I agree with you on this. Not only like, again, racial crimes, even like there's a lot of misogynism going in organizations. We need to tackle that. Again, I believe there should be some kind of structure dealing with that. Because even when you're reported, a lot of workplaces tend to ignore it. And so I believe there should be strong implementation tools or strategies needs to be in the law, because once it's written in the law, we could take a lot of action towards hate crimes and other kind of stigma and bullying and harassment. Because as I've said, a lot of people fear they will face that pressure, especially you get kind of like nowadays in social media, some groups are being used to target people for speaking out, and social media and online, it's like very difficult topic, because you don't want to kind of censor people, freedom of speech, but then again, freedom of speech is not licensed for racists to spread their hateful propaganda. And actually, a lot of people argue about when they say, like a lot of racists argue that freedom of speech should be used because I can say anything I want, which is not correct, because by that you are kind of diminishing of people's freedom of speech, especially of the vulnerable communities. So it's a really wrong idea. And but definitely we need more laws, and we need implementation of these laws in workplaces, because there's also institutional racism as well as structural inequalities. And as more years pass, and now Brexit is looming as well, people are very concerned that this inequality is going to grow.
There was a proposal on Twitter this week from the Greens of Colour representative group of the Green Party of England and Wales that all recruitment processes should be name blind, because there was some experience of some of the Greens of Colour where they, because they had names that weren't sort of traditional, you know, English or UK names, that they felt that their CVs would just get thrown away because it was clear from their name that they were a member of a minority ethnic group. What do you think about proposals like that?
I absolutely support this proposal, because it helps to avoid any stigma, and it offers equal opportunities to everybody. If your name is, like, according to statistics, if your name is from diverse backgrounds, especially if from the countries that had issues with UK, let's say Iraq or Afghanistan, your chances of getting a job will be not equal. Actually, it will be like triple times less. And like somebody named John Anderson have triple times higher chance than somebody named Abu like Jamal. And so it's very important to kind of give opportunities to people, because it's not the names that makes people different. We should be judging by the skills and their character, content of character.
That's something that we found with recruiting women as well, that when you do name blind, because many names are of course quite gender indicative, and obviously it's not a good gender indicator, but you know, it can be, and people tend to make assumptions, and it was absolutely been shown that if you change the name to be a sort of traditional male name, that CVs get treated differently. So I can see that benefiting equalities in a lot of ways if we treated recruitment processes as a name blind. I think that would be really interesting. So one of the things that I'd like to see in a future Scotland, I'm an immigrant myself. I'm a white English speaking immigrant, so I have a lot of privilege that comes with that. But I do feel that the UK hostile environment has been really negative. Theresa May called people like me a citizen of nowhere. I felt unwelcome. Certainly, my EU colleagues have been made to feel extremely unwelcome. At one point, at the Tory conference a couple of years ago, they were suggesting that all of us immigrants should be written on registers, that our employers and landlords have to check. I mean, this sort of pretty horrific times for immigrants. And checking my privilege here, I'm white. You can't spot I'm an immigrant until I open my mouth. But I mean, obviously, there's lots of UK people that are brown as well. You just can't tell these sorts of things. But people do make assumptions. What would a Scotland, what would a welcoming Scotland look like to you? How do we build that?
First of all, we need to stop indefinite detention in Scotland. Most people don't know that UK is only country in Europe that have indefinite detention. We need to shut indefinite detention centres like Yarl's Wood in England, and we got Dungavel in Scotland. A lot of people are completely against it. Actually, UK government, when I mean UK government, Tory government, tried to hide this, but Dungavel in Scotland, known as Guantanamo Bay, Scottish Guantanamo Bay, because it's run by the same organization that ran Guantanamo Bay, which is horrific. And I've been to this place many times. The way they treat women and vulnerable people is absolutely shocking and disgusting. As there's been also lots of cases of sexual harassment and child abuse as well, and it's very difficult to kind of report that because Home Office or the organizations doesn't allow other visitors and activists to access the asylum seekers, and most people also sent to very dangerous countries. Like we had a lot of people coming from with LGBTI background sent to the countries that have death penalty against LGBTI communities, which is, I believe, absolutely shocking. And so I believe we need some system that treats everybody with dignity. I believe no children should be persecuted. And from actually economical point of view, Scotland needs more immigration, especially we are facing very acute demographic crisis, and Brexit is going to increase that. And people need to ask themselves that who is going to look after old people, and when is older generation is increasing, as well as we need their talents. Like look at the NHS, it's run by the immigrants mainly. And so when like far right media trying to describe immigrants, I don't know why they always use one criminal example to stereotype everybody when we do have a lot of successful examples of immigrants. For instance, like one of the Scottish writers, national writer, Jackie Kay, is from originally Nigerian background. We have a lot of good sportsmen and musicians, and a lot of people contributed to the UK. And but there's a ways if we are going to treat migrants like the way the UK government, the Theresa May government, treated the Windrush generation with such
Horrendous.
cruelty, which was absolutely shocking. We are going to repeat same mistakes, and by repeating same mistakes, we are going to create a lot of hostility in our communities, and we don't want to do that.
Something that I get asked quite a lot by journalists, and I'm interested in your point of view. So I'm in favor of Scottish independence, although I'm not Scottish in any way, except the fact that I live here. And it's something that people ask about is what's the difference between civic nationalism and the sort of blood and soil traditional nationalism? Is there really a difference? What do you think about that?
This is a very not easy topic, but I believe whoever contributes to Scotland should consider themselves Scottish, because there is no kind of like brand like as nationalism, and it's very dangerous to judge people based on their nations, because we are creating again a lot of stereotypes, and you don't want to kind of divide and conquer. That like the way the word asylum seekers and refugees used towards migrants from non-white background, and expats used for the white background people.
Oh, I know.
And so I believe Scottish independence movement is very diverse. A lot of especially people from diverse backgrounds support that. And the reason is that we believe there will be more kind of open culture towards migrants, because all we have seen from Tory government is demonization of the migrants and blaming all economic problems to migrants because they are easy kind of fruit. Like they cannot defend themselves, because like most asylum seekers cannot work, and unfortunately even other vulnerable groups such as Roma community is getting targeted as well, which I believe is sickening and it should be stopped. you don't want to kind of stigmatize groups, especially when they're already facing a lot of barriers in their life as well. We need to stop that, and we need to fight for the better Scotland. And I support Scottish independence because I believe the best people to run Scotland are the people who live in our country.
So civic nationalism then is the is those of us who live in Scotland having a say and running our own country. It's an interesting thing that the sort of right wing and the Tory party are very keen, as you say, to scapegoat those who cannot fight back. Migrants, immigrants, brown people, Roma people, it's all their fault, our fault. I always feel that that's the classic, so that you don't look around and see whose fault it really is. Who's living in palaces? Who's keeping all their money in tax havens? Who's dodging taxes? You know, it's the classic of the rich and powerful scapegoating the people least responsible for climate change. I mean, that's one of these things that drives the Greens nuts as well, is that powerful people, wealthy people, people who take private jets, who drive around in SUVs, who have massive houses with massive lawns, have an enormous environmental footprint. Poor people have almost no environmental footprint. It's the rich and powerful who are damaging the planet. But they're always with the, oh, look away, look at those other people. And it just drives us crazy.
I completely agree with you on this point as well, because when it comes to like climate change, like I'm completely against fracking because that will destroy our not only economy, because it's very unsafe, but it's very damaging to the earth itself. And we need to think about future generations that is going to live as well. Furthermore, we can see like on a positive side, we'll see there's a more awareness about environmental issues, but we need to act now before it's too late, because nature doesn't wait. And there's even good saying, it's a Russian saying, if we don't take care of the nature will take care of us. And need to very carefully analyze the situation and act fast. For instance, we have like a trident, and a lot of people in Scotland are against these nuclear weapons. And yesterday there was a 75 years since Hiroshima bombing. And we need to get rid of it, because that money that is going to be used against renewal of these nuclear weapons can be used to invest in our education, in our health sector that needs a lot of money. And so I believe it's time to get more. I always have a saying, get angry and get loud and take action. Because when you are kind of peaceful watching through television, people tend to forget that sitting in the house doesn't get things done. But we need to act more, and everybody needs to get involved in their communities. And the more we are involved in grassroots organizations, the more we will be able to help our country as well.
So something that I know you have views about and is part of the sort of hostile environment is about spousal visas. How could we change spousal visas in a future Scotland, in a more welcoming Scotland?
The thing is, I don't know from which year, but there used to be no requirement for spousal visa. And nowadays you need to earn at least £18,600 to get your partner here, which is causing a lot of issues, because not everybody is earning that amount of money. And it drives a lot of families apart, because it's not easy to live when you're like a partner is in different country, especially when you have a children in different country, and when you are not earning, especially in today's climate, when there's a coronavirus and Brexit is coming, a lot of people will be jobless. And I believe families should be together, and nobody should be stigmatized. And that wage limit needs to be removed. Because it denies a lot of people from happiness, and the people who are suffering are UK citizens, because these are people who are married UK citizens, and we should be taking different type of approach. At least it should be lower to very low amount of money, or it could be paid later, because a lot of families are already traumatized by waiting and earning this money, and they are taking a lot of years from people's happiness and lives, which causes a lot of anxiety. Causes a lot of people with good skills cannot move to this country because of these demonic and draconian barriers.
And surely it's a human rights violation. We have a human right to family. And if you can't be with your family because of some arbitrary limit like that, that doesn't seem right at all. And as you mentioned before, Asylum seekers aren't legally allowed to work, even if they could earn a wage like that, which seems to me to be crazy that you can't say, please contribute to our economy, please pay taxes, please integrate in our society. We force asylum seekers into this terrible limbo where they're not coming, they're not going, they can't be with their family, they can't build a new life. It's really cruel, and I think it must be terribly traumatic for people in those circumstances.
I spoke to many asylum seekers, and a lot of asylum seekers do want to work. They want to contribute, they want to help the local economy, and because their life, you cannot live on £30 or £50 you're getting, because it's not enough, and it's especially difficult when you are coming from a country that you are persecuted, and as well as getting low money. And this helps, this actually pushes more people to be destitute and creates even more hostile situation towards immigrants. And unfortunately as well, Home Office tend to put a lot of the asylum seekers in very poor areas by creating even more stigma, which is, I think, is appalling. And everybody, and even homelessness issue, if we deal with these cases, homelessness issue will go down, and as well as food bank users. I believe it's disgraceful to live in this country, one of the most richest countries in the world, and have so much food banks when we can feed so many people by introducing universal basic income, because I believe that is the future for us.
Excellent. And I know that another topic that you've spoken on before that I'm interested in hearing about is about surveillance culture. Now, I don't really know what surveillance culture is, but can you explain that to me?
By that, I mean a lot of people are concerned that how their data has been used. Recently, we saw the way that Facebook's trying to track people, and we can see from Donald Trump's election, there's a lot of third-party forces our information being used against us, especially when we have never given permission. So I believe there should be laws preventing that, especially facial recognition technology, because this can be used to violate people's privacy, and sometimes a lot of this technology can make mistakes, and that can put people in the very grave danger, because nobody wants to be framed as a criminal when they have never done anything. So we need laws to prevent that. In USA, some states already passed that laws, and even Bernie Sanders supported that law, saying we need to stop facial recognition technology, because as we've seen in other countries, in countries like China, in even now it's being used in Russia and other countries, that this type of technology creates even more authoritarian government and atmosphere. And we need to be very careful of that. And as more technology gets involved in our lives, we also need to support privacy laws, because you don't want a third-party person spying on your life.
And I think there's been proven that lots of these artificial intelligence surveillance programs are racist because they're created by white people and tested on white people. And then if you have a darker skinned person, they don't work, they aren't as accurate, the matching algorithm. So it's much easier to someone to be misidentified, and then you would be misidentified as a criminal forever. And I can imagine that trying to correct that kind of problem in a database somewhere, some faceless corporation's got your data, got your image next to criminal, would be almost impossible to get rid of. That just seems like a recipe for injustice.
Yeah, it's very, very concerning. One of the issues as well, we are very concerned that some of these projects is used to track and to recruit people for like military. We need to check our schools. There's a lot of military recruitment being going on in schools, and we need to stop that, because a lot of children actually don't have a knowledge about what is army before signing up to it. And there's a word for that. You don't want children to be cannon fodder in some pointless war, when we can create better future. And the key question will be asking why they're recruiting it. And we live in an area like there's a lot of course security issues, but having more draconian laws, it did not improve in any country's security, as we can see in USA, that there's a lot of massacre shooting going on, and having guns did not protect anybody in terms of.
Police departments having tanks didn't protect anybody. Police departments wearing armor. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, I'm all aboard with the defunding of the police because it, as you say, armoring up, doesn't help. it doesn't solve the problem, it doesn't make crime go away, it just turns your police into a military.
Exactly. There is like kind of there was a research showing that firefighters tend to deal with these issues far better than police, because there's a lot of, in USA especially, racism towards people from the black community and Latino community. And we, like George Floyd's death proved that this there's a lot of wrong in the system, and we need to like kind of make sure the world is equal for everybody, because by ignoring women, by ignoring ethnic minorities, we are also ignoring half of the world, and we are creating huge inequality, and by helping them, we are also boosting the economy as well, and offering a safe and stable future as well for all of our communities. But there is a lot of work needs to be done, and as well as I would like to see a lot of educational change as well, because in when I was in school in Scotland, when I was studying, I did not learn a lot of stuff about other countries, and especially when it comes to slavery trade, especially when it comes to British Empire's colonial activities in foreign countries. And I believe it should be taught from both sides. There is a great saying that every country need to, all countries needs to change with their history books to see perspectives from different sides. And I strongly support that point of view, because we've seen in Scotland and in UK that a lot of people are against the slavery traders, because they cause so much misery to people who were enslaved. And we had a lot of, even in Scotland, we have lots of streets built in like a Jamaica street in because of the slave trade owners or slave owners. And we need to get rid of it. But by erasing history, we need to be very careful that to say that Scotland never had that. So you need to have a kind of like a slavery museum will go very well with this idea, by educating people as well as showing how from where we came and how we improved there, like the way we had like civil rights movement in the USA.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. It's been lovely speaking with you.
My pleasure.
And then life got